This is Emily Wright, tech editor and head of special projects at EG, and I'm joined today by Tim Burke, our deputy editor and head of content. How are you?
I am most well. How are you?
Very, very well. Most well. I like
most
that.
Most well.
Most well.
That's going to be that's my new thing now. I'm going to use it all the time.
I feel like I've been transported back in time about 150 years. And how are you? I'm most well. Thank you. It's nice to chat to you. We haven't had you on the podcast for a while. And we've got a really exciting We're Still Here coming up this week. So everybody should hold on to their hats and get ready for a mixture of young people, bright sparks, youth, interviews, high profile interview that Tim's done that we're going to talk through. So it's all go here at EG. No rest for the wicked. I hate that phrase. And I can't even get away with the fact that it's the Halloween episode because we're still a couple of weeks off. I hate that phrase, no rest for the wicked. Oh, it makes me cringe.
You should have saved it for the Halloween.
I'll say it again. The Halloween one. Anyway, nobody needs to know that I don't like that phrase, but in case anyone's interested, which they definitely won't be, I don't like it. So before we get on to what Tim's been up to this week, it's the talent special of EG. So for anybody that hasn't had a chance to have a look either in print or online, it's where we pull together all of the sort of exciting things that's happening in terms of talent and, well, obviously it being the talent issue, and youth in the sector as well. And one of the pieces that we're running this week, which has been a long time in the making because it's been pretty tricky pulling it together in a pandemic, is our 2020 EG Rising Stars. 5 years we've been doing this now. It's the fifth anniversary of the EG Rising Stars. And over the last 5 years, we have... Actually, I'm going to say it. We've done really well. We've picked really well. And our rising stars have gone on to do great things. I mean, if anyone's ever had a pizza at Pizza Pilgrims, the founders of Pizza Pilgrims were in our first crop of rising stars back in 2015. We've had, you know, the founders of WiredScore. We've had Ross Bailey from Appear Here. We've had, I'm just trying to think, so I don't want to leave anybody out. I mean, obviously it's been 5 years worth, so there've been plenty, but... And pretty much everybody that we've highlighted over the last 5 years has gone on to do great things. So obviously, congratulations to them. But yeah, well done us too. We've got a good eye. So this year, we are introducing our readers to 16 bright, fresh stars who are not going to let a pandemic stand in the way of their grand plans. They're from all parts of the sector, from traditional real estate, tech, finance, retail, sustainability, well-being. We've got all of the bases covered, and it's actually really inspirational. And you know, whether you are a young person in the sector yourself, or you're someone that's been in the industry for a long time or for a number of years, I'd really recommend having a read. We've asked them, you know, how they think the role of young people has changed over the last 5 years, how they'd like to see the role of young people in the sector change over the next 5 years. We want to know what they think the biggest misconception is about young people in the sector. We've asked them what inspires them, but we've tried to kind of move away from the obvious answers there. So I think somebody's come up with an excellent quote from Scrubs, the TV medical drama that they use as their daily mantra, which is fantastic.
I saw that. I might have to revisit that show.
Yeah, yes, exactly. From the janitor as well. And he's one of my favourite characters.
Yeah.
And we've also asked them what their biggest lockdown revelations have been. So please do check it out. It's free to air and it's online and it's also in print this week. And also in the talent special of EG, we catch up with two of our original future female leaders to talk about their career progression. And we catch up with our cohort of year two real estate students to find out how COVID has impacted their courses and their thinking about real estate. So it really is a must read for anybody, whatever stage you are in your career. And really proud of it, actually. And proud of all the people that have taken part and have been involved. So thank you so much to everybody. And we hope everybody enjoys the talent special. So
yeah, it really is a fantastic, fantastic package of stories. I was going to ask you, Emily, after you've been putting this together for 5 years.
Yeah.
After 5 years of looking at these as you bright young things, as you put it, in the industry, what do you think makes an EG rising star? What are you looking for?
Well, I think something that we focused on, not focused on, but something that we were open to right from the beginning was that they don't have to come from a traditional real estate background. And although obviously some of them do, and it wouldn't really be, you know, reflective of the industry if none of them did. You know, in our first year, I mentioned Pizza Pilgrims and I mentioned Ross Bailey. And I think Reza Merchant from The Collective was in our first crop as well. We definitely made sure that we had a mixture of people who were very traditional real estate backgrounds and training, people who were less traditional, and some people who had no real estate training whatsoever, because this industry is so eclectic and it's made up of so many components that it's not just about the core side of the real estate sector. And as the 5 years have progressed and tech and retail and innovation and all that kind of stuff, like fresh thinking as markets have struggled or faced challenges have become so important, that has just become stronger. So I'm really, you know, really pleased that we started off with that in mind. And there's a few people in this year's crop who mention that and say, you know, one of the questions is, what does it mean to be an EG rising star? You know, a couple of them said it's really encouraging and reassuring to not have a real estate background, but to still be considered integral enough to the sector to be an EG rising star. So that's one thing. And then you've got all the stuff that you'd expect me to say, you know, you need to be ambitious and, you know, but more than anything else, actually, I think to be an advocate for the sector and standing for something that they really believe in, it has to go beyond what you do in your day-to-day job, I think. And I'm going to avoid the phrase above and beyond because I also hate that one. But it's not just about being good at what you do. It's about how you want others to view what you do and what impact you want that to have on the wider sector. So we're expecting a lot more from young people in real estate, I think. And a lot of them said, when asked what's the biggest misconception, is that, you know, we're not a kind of a weak, entitled generation, as we are dismissed as so often. And in many ways, I agree with that, because I think there is a lot of pressure on young people. And I think more than ever, they're expected to deliver so much. And as I say, it just goes, it goes so far beyond what you do in your day job. So the people who are really advocating diversity, people who are really advocating sustainability, people who are really advocating a very different approach to the way that people start their careers in the sector. So it's not just a blinkered focus on hitting your targets or whatever it might be. That's the other thing that we're looking for. So those are the two things that I'd pick out.
I think it's, as I say, I think it's a fantastic list. And I think you're right. I think people will find it really inspirational to read. And one of those 16 is then named the overall winner. Is that right? At the EG Awards, October 29th?
Yes, absolutely. So out of our 16 Rising Stars, one will be, as Tim says, named the winner of the Rising Stars category at the EG Awards in October.
Well, we're in October. Do you know who's won?
I might do.
You can tell me after we stop recording.
Yeah, no, we've had a fantastic history of winners of the award as well. So I'm sure that this year's winner will follow in those footsteps too. So all very exciting stuff. So that's the talent. And what a great talent special it is. But you've been very busy this week as well. And we have a treat for our listeners. We have a fantastic interview that we've even gone to the lengths of like picking out the best bits, and we've got snippets and we're going to give everybody the real highlights. But could you tell everyone a bit more about what it's all about?
Of course. So for this week's EG interview, I had the chance to sit down, not in person, but over Teams, with Chris Kane. So Chris, as I'm sure many of our listeners will know, is best known as the former head of corporate real estate at the BBC. When he was there, he was involved with projects like the Broadcasting House redevelopment and the organization's regional relocation plans. So Media City in Salford, for example. He was involved in moving the BBC into the mailbox in Birmingham, initiatives like that. And Chris has now written a book titled Where Is My Office? Reimagining the Workplace for the 21st Century, which is out this week, and delves into the ways that companies real estate strategies are shifting and how the real estate industry should be responding. Now, Chris started work on this book about 6 years ago, he told me. So obviously he couldn't have foreseen quite the circumstances under which he was going to be publishing it, but it really does feel it feels more relevant than ever now. So as you say, we'll make Chris something of our virtual guest today and play a few clips from the interview, which, as I say, is in this week's magazine and you can read online now. Here's Chris on whether talent will demand new working practices as a result of the pandemic.
What we're witnessing is a systemic change, and not only has sort of the ball changed, but the stadium. And the, if you think about it, there's no point in saying, we're heading back to recovery and it'll be a sort of a new normal. It won't be, because the big, big, big thing underpinning all of this is that enterprises need talented people to run their business. Now, many of those talented people put up with lengthy commutes and expensive train fares and loss of or sacrifice on the home front. You have to think about where talent are going, and talent will not want to come back into the office. And you've probably heard a lot of talking about the 3+2. We're still trying to force our thinking around Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. It's going to move to an outcomes-based world in the not-too-distant future, where companies are saying, if you can deliver what I need from you in 5 hours or 50 hours, I don't care. But you don't need to go into the office just to send emails. So going back to the core point of most investors and brokers and designers have always focused upon the deal, the transaction. Now yeah. We're going to have to think about the whole life.
So Chris suggests there that talent will not want to come back into the office, which is feels to me quite a bold statement. And of course, it's one of the huge questions for companies, because it's going to affect how much space they need, where they need it, and how often people visit it. I mean, his point is quite interesting there, that when we talk about maybe spending just 2 days in the office from now on and then 3 days working at home rather than all five in the office, you know, he thinks maybe we're kidding ourselves that our working practices will ever actually return to that 9-to-5 working week, that everything is going to be, I guess, a lot more flexible heading into, I'm about to use a phrase that I hate, after your no rest for the wicked and above and beyond, the new normal, the unprecedented new normal.
It's an interesting point from him, really interesting point, because, I just can't call it. A lot of people, young people in particular, seem to be suggesting that this prolonged isolation is just not working for them, and that they miss the office. But, we'll have to see. I think the point is, of course, that nobody knows. No one knows what's going to happen.
We're all trying to work it out, aren't we?
Absolutely.
And I guess I guess sort of finding the answers to that, this ties into another point that Chris discusses in the book and in our interview, is, it will take communication and collaboration to work out how real estate needs to respond to these changes. And Chris writes in the book about the disconnect that has existed between landlord and tenant. And Chris has seen the industry from different sides. So before he was at the BBC and prior to that, he worked in real estate for Walt Disney. He was at JLL. So he's seen a lot of these issues both from the occupier's perspective and firms within the real estate industry. And I asked him whether he thought that gap in expectations between landlord and tenant had been addressed. And in his response, he suggests that it's really never gone away. Here's what he said.
The industry hasn't really copped on to the fact that the nature of consumption has changed, but also the power has shifted from the producer to the consumer. And, many people, many heads of corporate real estate I spoke would say, there isn't any emotional connection. Everything is done through third parties, understandably, because that's the broking system. But apart from maybe a meeting or two with the signed lease or something, there's no connection, with some exceptions. Now, some of the, what I would say, the shrewder players, and this is, I call it the green shoots. Over the last back end of 2019, I went to the States and chatted to a lot of people, and I was quite surprised by how many were really taking on board this need to provide a customer experience. And, you know, I mean, like, my question to the industry is, how many of us understands the customer journey? And, you know, in describing, you know, the leasing process in the book, is in very, you know, some people might say it's overly simplistically, but deliberately so. Looking at the series of handoffs and the amount of expense and the amount of effort required to procure space, is there any wonder that the likes of Mark Dixon have become as successful as they have, and the co-working? And, you know, what happened in the last few years was that WeWork did the whole flexible market a huge service by actually bringing this concept to the eyes and ears of the C-suite, you know, of the leadership group. And that's just only said, aha, maybe I do have real choice. I was told you either have to take that building at that lease or buy that building, and that was my choice. And that was all building up ahead of steam. And you may have seen in the book, I talk about the hidden paradigm shift and about a whole raft of seemingly disconnected factors, the shift from analog to digital, from fixed to porous, the whole mindset of the employee. All of this stuff was happening in parallel. Now, COVID has brought it all together and poured high-octane fuel on it.
I liked his metaphor there, that coronavirus has poured high octane fuel on what was already changing pretty fast in the industry. I thought it was interesting that Chris singles out flexible and co-working companies for driving so much of the change. And I think we've got to remember that for all the criticism of WeWork's model, and indeed for some of the current bad press around some of IWG and Regus's practices when it comes to dealing with landlords, these businesses have really changed the discussion around not just how workplaces operate, but how corporate occupiers relate to and talk to their real estate counterparties, if you will. These companies have presented another way. And, you know, Chris's point that was hugely appreciated in boardrooms, you know, in multiple sectors, I think really speaks to the necessity for real estate to focus more on that customer journey, as Chris puts it, when occupiers are looking at their footprint. And again, look, I guess one of the big questions that comes out of this period is the extent to which that flex proposition now becomes more important for occupiers. And it's something we've written a lot about at EG, and will no doubt have quite some way to play out as we sort of lurch in and out of various lockdowns and other restrictions. And I thought, I thought one last insight that would be quite neat to share from Chris. There's been a lot of talk about whether regional cities can benefit as companies rethink what their property footprint's going to look like, and whether that might happen at London's expense. So given that Chris was involved in so many regional projects for the BBC, I asked him to share his thoughts on how to make relocations work. But first of all, he picked up on my choice of words, because I'd asked him about London versus the regions, and he focused in on that word versus. Here's Chris.
I like the way you talk about London versus the regions. I think it's, and you know, if I may use that to draw the analogy, I don't think it's a case of one location versus another anymore. I think it's an and. And I would suggest that it's London and the suburbs and the small towns of Southeast England and some of the regional cities. Because for the first time ever, I think organizations have the opportunity to think on a network basis rather than a place basis. And I think also that, I mean, having been involved in relocations since the early 90s and seeing, for example, the disaster of moving the Department of Health to Leeds and all the senior people going up and down the train on back to Whitehall, you know, is one of the great case studies said about why not to relocate or decentralize. I think the government hubs program is making a far better fist of that. And Stephen Boyd is driving lots of change there. But that's why we went for a media city, because we knew we had to make it sufficiently sexy to attract the creatives out of London.
Yeah.
And we had to make the buildings not only fit for purpose and effective, but also they had to appeal to these folk. And you know what Alan Bainbridge has done in the last of the series, the new headquarters for BBC in Cardiff, is remarkable. I haven't yet to see it, but you know, there he brings in the whole neurodiversity angle, which was only evolving when I was there. So it's moved, and I suppose to answer your question, I think it'll be much more thoughtful and much more networked rather than binary either or.
I thought that was quite a positive outlook. I like the idea that as companies do think differently about where they want to base their offices, whether they'll look at, let's say, more of the hub and spoke model, that the success of one location doesn't necessarily mean the failure of others. There's it becomes more of a network than an either or option. And it also made me think, I mean, just a quick plug here, of course, EG is holding its Virtual Future of London programme at the moment. And next month we'll have our Future of UK Cities event. So I thought it was quite nice to hear that in Chris's mind, at least, there is room for all of those markets to contribute to the future of the workplace.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that this the London regions, and then you've got London, and you've got the major sort of regional cities, and you've got regional towns. It feels like through over the last few months, and it has been, I suspect, accelerated by the pandemic, it feels like cities have simultaneously kind of come together and been segregated, like depending on where we are with various restrictions and lockdowns. But overall, it feels to me, and I hope that people agree with this, or would certainly agree with it when we come out the other side of this, that it has brought people and cities together. And I know that there's been an awful lot of talk as well about city exoduses. I'm not sure how I feel about that, actually. I think that, you know, once things are much improved, I can't see people just abandoning our cities. But it's definitely made people think about, you know, places other than London. It's made people think about how all of our cities fit together and knit together as a network. And in some ways, and as I always say, you know, this is not the route to success or the route to a positive outcome that anybody would have wished for. If it can make us think in a more cohesive fashion, then that has to be a silver lining.
I was going to use exactly that phrase, but then I was worried that you'd say you hated that one too.
No, I like that one.
That's okay then. So yeah, it was great to have that opportunity to chat with Chris. I think he's got some really interesting thoughts on what our offices and workplaces need to deliver and how the real estate industry needs to be responding to that. So if you like what you've heard from him here, there is more, as I say, in this week's EG interview.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, Tim. It feels like this episode of We're Still Here, while we've been talking about two separate things, the talent issue and then the interview with Chris, it's all very future. It's future themed, isn't it? You know, it's all looking ahead. And when times are tough and when there's a lot of uncertainty, sometimes it's all you can do. Just take one day at a time, look ahead, keep on going. And that has to be a positive. So I'm really trying on these podcasts as much as I can to wrap everything up into a positive final thought, because for many weeks, I'll be honest, we struggled because there have been some really, really tough times, tough weeks, tough stories, and the industry is really suffering, and you know, people are really suffering, and people's mental health is really suffering. But I think that if anything, this week's We're Still Here is proof that there are bright times ahead. There are bright sparks out there looking to make change, looking to forge ahead, looking to use what's happened as, you know, an unfortunate but available opportunity to really change the industry. And then you've got people like Chris who've been working in this sector for many, many years and who've long been trailblazers, who've got their thoughts on the future as well. And between all of us, surely we'll be able to come out the other side of this better and stronger.
I have no doubt. Emily, thank you for having me.
Not at all. Thanks for joining. And to all of our listeners, we're still here demonstrably, and we will still be here next week as well. And we'll chat to you then.